We're convening at 2:08
on time,
which is the same as 1:34 on this 13th day of February 2012. We have a quorum with members: Representative Newman, Representative Costello, Representative Dugan, Co-Chair Thomas Stoltz, and Representative Guerra. And you have. I know two members are previously excused, Representative Fairclough and Representative Jewell, and Representative Edgman has told me he'll be in the meeting later at some point, and he can come at a beck and call if we need him for movement. That we have measures before us today. We have naming of Senate House Bill 246, naming certain bridges. House Bill 248, the Owl Wright Airport at Minto. House Bill 249, Koyukuk Station, Veterans Airport. Those will be merged into one bill, and we'll see how this grows and Christmas trees and whatever, anybody that wants to name something after them. So. I hope not. I hope there is some. This is meant for purposes of efficiency. We'll see how it goes. We will recognize all those bills coming up at once, but take public testimony and deal with them all together at the same time. If that's okay with you, Mr. Co-Chair, given that you're the parent of... Did you want to have your staff?
You want to talk to CS?
Yeah. I just want to position them. I have the two staff.
Yep. They're ready.
Okay,
Mr. Chair, I move for adoption in CS for HB 246 Finance Version 27-LS0921/B Wayne 21012 for adoption. Working document.
Are there any objections? So this vehicle just... moved and adopted is now before us for consideration. Why don't we have both representative your staff and the other
staff? I tried to nod, but
you guys can decide who can talk first. Ms. Schroeder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record.
Hotch, I'm sorry.
Casey Schroeder, Hotch.
Hotch.
Staff to Representative Thomas.
Had it wrong twice. Please.
House Bill 246 names 15 bridges in the Cordova area as well as two airports. The City of Cordova has requested that 15 of its bridges be named after some of its finest residents. First, the city has requested that the bridge over the Eyak River be named after Marie Smith Jones. Marie Smith Jones was an Eyak elder who worked tirelessly to preserve the Eyak language. Upon her death, she left behind one of the most comprehensive records of any Aboriginal language. The city has also requested that 14 of its bridges be named after each of the brave young men that they lost in World War I, World War II, and Vietnam. And for the record, they are: in World War I, Cordova and our country lost James Bennett, William Jones, Steve Green, Lucian Platt, Matthew Anderson, W.H. Mumby, and John Jones. In World War II, Cordova and our country lost Patrick Bruchette, Norman Osborne, and Leonard Olson. In Vietnam, Cordova and our country lost David Elisovsky, David Lake, Warren Paulson, and Michael Banta. Naming these bridges after these prominent individuals is the least we can do to thank them for our service. And we also have Cynthia from Representative Dick's office to talk to the airports.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cynthia Erickson with Representative Al Dick's office. HB 248 Minto Al Wright Airport. Al Wright was born at Tamna Crossing on April 26, 1925, to Arthur and Myrtle Wright, missionaries in the Minto Flats area. Arthur Wright was Athabascan Indian, and Myrtle was white. Mrs. Wright was one of the first nurses in the villages. In 1930, the family moved to Minto. The Wright family lived a subsistence lifestyle. In Minto, his dad tried to start a school. He had a hard time because the kids had to go back to seasonal subsistence camps. Each child would bring a stick of wood as tuition. When the wood ran out, that ended the day's the school day. When Al was 9, he moved to Indiana, where his father started started work in the shipyard. His family also cut and sold wood for $8 a cord with a Sears and Roebuck wood saw. They dragged the wood with the Model T vehicle back to the village to sell. Al was 15 when he started in construction on defense projects all over interior Alaska. He had no formal training and learned as he went along. His skills were in high demand on the defense projects. However, he wanted to join the Army. The only way he could leave his job was to quit the construction work and get drafted. When he got out of the Army, he found out he could get his pilot's license with the GI Bill. He originally started for fun, but never got away from flying. His first plane was a 65 Tailorcraft. One day, a man asked to charter him to pick up furs. He said, "Boy, this is the way to make money." From then on, he started hauling trappers and developing a business. His first charter was $20 an hour with fuel, plane, and pilot. He taught himself to fly with floats with no formal training. His first flight was to pick up a dying man in a Minto fish camp. He flew about 200 hours before he was forced to get official float rating. He had trouble getting ratings and licenses because he had little education. He struggled his whole life because he never learned how to read well, write, or spell. He quit school after the sixth grade as he took on more seasonal work with his family. Al started Wright's Air Service in 1950, which continued to grow in interior Alaska. His focus was on maintaining high standards with maintenance and with his employees. He was a critical link for scheduled mail and charter flights to about 20 villages. Wright's Air today is a well-known charter operation in the interior, supporting government surveys, seasonal camps, firefighting, land surveying, and hunting expeditions. In 1983, Al sold his airline to longtime friend and pilot Bob Russell. Bob continues to run the airline with the same old-time values, kindness, and respect Al had for his people in the villages.
Question? You have the second bill, Ms. Kreitzer?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you wanted to take up the amendment related to the El Minto Airport at this time, or you wanted to wait until...
We'll take the public testimony.
Okay, thank you.
And description. I actually appreciate having on the record something about these being, and I noticed these are all under bridges or have generic designations, general geographical or numbers, so we're not displacing any other names. Is that, you have the bulk of them, Mr. Chairman, it's in your region. Is that a fair assessment of my reading?
Yes, you are correct.
Don't get used to it. So, Gary?
Almighty one.
Do you have any bridges, causeways, or anything?
No, I think okay. Though, Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Representative Guerra.
Driven around Cordova, and so the bridges get washed out every once in a while, and you've got to move them. Do the names move?
Actually, they don't all move. They just rebuild them. I was just told DOT is taking one down and rebuilding it. So, but actually, they end up dry, so I think they named ones that have water under them. But if I may, I called Cordova there in the middle of a disaster conference with the Military Veterans Affairs over the disaster that happened and occurred in Cordova, so they won't be able to call in. But I wanted to, when we get to public testimony, I'll say something then.
Having had the honor, I believe it was 2006, accompanying you to Cordova, I was moved by the outpouring. I don't know what Cordova is. Cordova's population is about 3,500 or so.
I think
3,000.
Like 2,500.
2,500. It seemed like we had about 2,000 people at the ceremony there honoring. We had the moving wall, Vietnam veterans moving wall there. And Cordova, I think, is along with some of the island communities of Southeast Alaska, have paid the highest price in contribution not just the Vietnam War, but I think all wars, and I've noted the level of patriotism in those communities. And it's certainly an emotional event. I'm eternally grateful that I was allowed to join you at that event.
Oh, yeah.
That's the time my grandfather came into Alaska in 1928, which makes him a newcomer by Dugan standards.
He's a Johnny come lately.
Dugan, were you here in 1928?
Only in spirit.
So I appreciate that the veterans were named. Was there further testimony on the other bridge, I believe, though, before we filibuster your bill? Is it too late? Please.
For the record, Cynthia Erickson with Representative Alnick's office. HB 249, Keokuk Station, Veterans Airport. The original village of Keokuk, primarily all Keokukan Athabascan Indians, was established around 1867. It used to be called Keokuk Station because a military telegraph line was constructed along the north side of the Yukon, and Keokuk became the site of the telegraph station. In naming the airport, the residents also wish to honor the many Native military veterans who have served their country. Keokuk is located on the Yukon River, 30 miles west of Galena and 290 air miles from Fairbanks. It is adjacent to the Keokuk and Noko River refuges. The Russian traders were a big influence in this area, opening a trading post around 1880. Roman Catholic missionaries also had a major impact on the Athabascans. The first school was constructed in 1939. This resulted in the Keokuk people living in the village year-round. Up until then, the Keokuk Athabascans lived a subsistence lifestyle, moving among seasonal fish and game camps. They moved as the wild game migrated. Most of the people who settled here were from up the Keokuk River as far as the Dolby River, which is close to Huslia. Even when people settled in Keokuk, they continued to travel up the Keokuk to winter trapping camps and returning in the spring. The native name for Keokuk is Manilkatsitok is the name of the mountain at Keokuk. Madeline Solomon, now deceased elder from Keokuk, had said the mountain was named Manilkatsitok because long ago the Keokuk people used to get clay at the mountain and mix with bird feathers to make clay pots. Eliza Jones, an elder from Keokuk, said that an Athabascan tok would be added on, meaning the base of a mountain. Manilkatsitok means at the base of the Keokuk Mountains. Today, Keokuk people are still living a subsistence lifestyle. The main employment is local government, clinic, school, store, and any firefighting and construction or seasonal jobs.
Thank you. Normally, we don't read, but this, I wanted that information be read in the record. So if you come here with another bill, don't read the sponsor statement, but this one is a special occasion. So just wanted, for the record, we don't read sponsor statements, but this was a relaying of some important history. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to say that I'm happy that you waived that and allowed her to read that, because I just learned a whole lot about these places just sitting here.
Representative Guttenberg, who has joined us moments after we started, for the record.
Thank you. I made a reference to the sponsor of the bill on the floor that due to the nature of Al Wright's political career, that we amended it to Al Wright for Governor Bridge. I remember he was just was always there running for office, and as bizarre as we think our APOC laws are now, then you could put your name on a ballot, and if you didn't designate the year, it just ran from election cycle to election cycle. So, and his barge that was famous for being on the Chena River. Thank you.
All good stuff for everybody to learn more about local history. I appreciate it. We have the proclamation from Cordova endorsing the naming of all those bridges. Are there similar expressions of support from communities from your bridges? I don't see them in the packet, but if they're...
Oh, yes, through the chair.
And that was
Ms. Erickson. To Minto and Keokuk, and they're in support of the...
Were they verbal or were they written?
Verbal.
If we can ask them if they can, I don't add to the record their support. We're going to trust that this stuff just didn't appear miraculously, and it has been through the conversation. I don't think, but just as this proceeds, please make sure that those are added to the record, because I think it's an important process that these were supported by those local governments.
Through the chair, they have already had a sign made up and did the Minto Airport. This is just the official, so.
We're catching up to it now.
Okay. Is it letters?
Ms. Kreitzer.
Matt Kreitzer, staff to Representative Allendick. I just need to correct, since one representative did say he was glad for the history that was presented. Al Wright is not the Wright brother who ran for office.
Oh, brother.
And so,
you correct?
Eddie Don Wright, I think.
Was that what it was, Don Wright?
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you. I actually knew Al Wright a little bit, so I realized he wasn't one of the Wright brothers. But
I was wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong about Wright. Wright brothers. And,
okay.
And I'm not sure that if he were here and he heard somebody saying that, he would probably respond in a way that you might not actually want on the record, Mr. Chairman.
I wish all bills, all days were as enjoyable as this one.
So Mr. Chair,
Genberg.
I recognize that I was wrong about Wright.
Okay.
All right. Oh, I mean, not all right. Okay. Okay. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to testify on this bill?
Not anymore.
Is there anybody here in the audience? Is there anybody in a teleconference? And we will try to do our best to add those to the public record, Ms. Erickson. Just, I know it's Representative Newman. Oh.
Have a good day, sir. We're not done yet.
Okay, I just thought you had your hand up. But
that's my hand.
I just I know how important it is for a community. I know to recognize people that have distinguished themselves through various acts, some unselfish, heroic acts, and through some through years of community service. Appreciate the opportunity, and I hope this thing looks similar to what it is when it comes back to us for concurrence. Or it has equally thoughtful process. I know it's a big deal for me as I drive out every morning when I am lucky enough to be home. The bridge that I cross is named after my parents, and then right at the intersection of Stoltz Drive is Margaret Milkey Drive, and Alaska's first poet laureate. It's like they're looking over my shoulders, and sometimes I'll stop there and think for a minute, and it's like they're looking over my shoulders. I'm starting the day, and it's inspirational for me. I'm lucky enough to live in a neighborhood where I get to see that, I know it's, and for the record there, that name of that road and the bridge is after my parents, not me. And his name, it was named so before I was elected. We do have an amendment. Does everybody have the amendment from Representative Thomas?
Okay, amendment number one.
I'm going to object just on the record to show what we're doing.
Okay, on page 2, line 23, before Al Wright, we insert Minto Al Wright Airport.
And this is the Gatto Amendment, is it right?
It would be.
Okay, is there any objection? Hearing none, amendment number 1, and that's to the CS, is adopted. Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to speak on some of the names here. Marine Smith Jones was the last EAC fluent speaker, and so it was only right that we pay tribute to her, even because she did leave the ability for people to pronounce after, but she was the last fluent EAC speaker. Michael Dean Banta, Warren Allen Paulson, David Lapp, and David Alasowski were all killed in Vietnam. Cordova had the highest per capita loss in Alaska with the loss of those four boys. And just for the record, Co-Chair, David Alasowski's, his sister-in-law is the receptionist at the Reluctant Hotel there in Cordova. So when you check in, she's the jovial, nice lady behind the desk. And I got to know, them and the Banta family. I just want to point out that her brother-in-law, David, was with a band of soldiers from Haines when the Vietnam crisis started. They went over as a division. They went over as the 101st Airborne Division, and they were all together. It was David Land, Gary Cranston, and John Barry. And then Gary Cranston, if you watch the movie We Were Soldiers, was taken out of the 101st Airborne and put in the 1st Air Cav and transferred over. But Don Berry, who lives in Skagway, was David Alasowski's platoon sergeant and a very good friend of mine. I grew up with him. And David Land is my deckhand halibut fishing. I didn't know that for years until I bothered up with him. But I went to see John Berry. in Skagway, and I was having a beer with him, and I said, John, do you remember David Elisowski? He was drinking his beer, and it was really sad. He popped his beer, and he looked around. He looked at me. He said, Bill, I remember every boy I lost in Vietnam. It was pretty sad. And David Land was with him when David got shot. David Elisowski got shot by a sniper. And John Berry dove in the river for half a day looking for him the next day after he found out he had lost him. So it's quite a story. And I think I told him I was going to be naming a bridge after him. We get this done, we're going to take them all to Cordova. They have never been together since then. And I thought, well, it would be kind of interesting because David Land got malaria, was medevaced out. John Berry stayed there, and Gary Cranston drives cab in Sitka. So, small world in Soviet, and we'll all go up there and name the bridge after David. In Banta, he was a helicopter pilot there, but his brother, Joe Banta, if you know Prince William Sound, survey, yeah. He's in charge of that, so if you ever hear a name, Banta, he's the Joe guy that's in charge of that for there in Valdez. So, anyway, that's what I know about these guys.
One of them had the nickname Digger.
Digger. I don't know, but the moment that... if we asked Jerry McCune to be here, but Jerry grew up with each one of these four boys there, and probably why he didn't want to be here. So I'm looking forward to going up there, and even though I'm losing, may lose them after redistricting, I want to go up, take these guys up there, and go visit them.
Well, if your reapportionment is anything like mine, we may lose people who can vote for or against this, but our districts only get larger.
Yeah.
You don't, after you've served somebody for a decade, you just don't forget about them.
That's what I told them. I said, you know, I have stepchildren. They never let me go. No.
Any other comments? Would you care to move the bill?
Sure.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move from Committee CSHB 246 Finance, version 27-LS092 on /B, Wayne 21012, with accompanying fiscal note, which we didn't talk about.
It was amended.
So. As amended.
And there backtrack. There is a fiscal note. It's kind of a set real price, how much these signs cost. And
yep. $121,000. So. Peanuts. I know.
Worthwhile expenditure. We're going to make a lot less work before we're done.
A lot bigger and a lot.
So, is there any objection to the bill moving with as amended with the attached fiscal note? Hearing none, we pass the bill out.
Thank you.
We'll take just a brief recess while we let people sign the report and get ready for the next bill. Back to order after brief at ease. We have before us, we previously adopted the committee substitute for House Bill 118 Finance. We left with some questions in abeyance. We'll just open it up to you want to make any opening comments or you want to wait for questions, Mr. Thayer?
I was going to introduce, for the record, Chairman Saltz, Chairman Thomas. My name is Curtis Thayer, and I serve as the Deputy Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for the State of Alaska. And with me today is Deputy Commissioner Bruce Tangeman of the Department of Revenue. And we will be open to answer any questions that you might have.
It's been about a week or so since we've had the bill before us. Our information before us. Everybody's had the CS for a while. The amendments being offered have been in everybody's packets. General questions on the bill before we go to amendments and fiscal notes. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Please go to my amendments, and actually, I think there might be an amendment in the packet from last year, which I'm not going to offer. But I just want to clarify a few things on the record. First of all, last year it wasn't clear at all that if we granted a state R&D tax credit, that wouldn't make the federal R&D tax credit disappear. But my understanding from a letter that you sent the other day is that the state tax credit is on top of the federal tax credit, and we don't in any way prejudice somebody's ability to get the federal tax credit by adopting a state R&D tax credit. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that is correct. And for the record, I am Bruce Tangeman, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. That's correct.
Okay. Through the chair. The other question, and this one leaves me a little uncomfortable, is I understand from your letter to me, I assume you maybe distributed it to other members, I'm not sure. I wanted to make sure that the R&D tax credit wasn't on top of any of the generous deductions and tax credits we give in ACES, and your answer was no, it's not on top of those. Those are excluded. But in your letter, you said those are excluded by a regulation under ACES. There's a regulation under ACES that says R&D is not included in the ACES tax credits and deductions. And I guess my concern is that's just a regulation that could be changed by the department. And if your intention is to not allow this tax credit to go on top of ACES tax credits and deductions, do you have any objection to putting that in statute?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, statute 4355-165 does address the what is allowable under the oil and gas production tax, and it's to explore, develop, or produce oil. And then within there, we reference the regulation 55250, which explicitly states that research and development is not applicable. So we believe there is, it's already stated quite clearly in statute and regulation.
Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
I mean, we're on the same page in that we don't intend these to be stackable, so, right. The question is whether we need an amendment. And right now the law says direct costs of exploring, developing, and producing. I could see somebody arguing the money that we're putting into research, R&D, for exploring, developing, and producing should be covered. You said they're not covered in a regulation, which is good, but without that regulation, were you to change that regulation, I'm not very comfortable that that we wouldn't result in a situation where you could have the R&D tax credit on top of the ACES tax credits and deductions. So why should I be comfortable? Because a direct cost of exploring, developing, and producing seems like that could include research and development in order to be able to explore and produce.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that's not the way I read it, and certainly the regulation is there to clarify the statute. So it's very explicit what is and is not allowed. So I think anything else added into this bill would just be overkill. It's already taken care of in statute and regulation.
Okay. We don't need to go back and forth on that. I guess I'll just say I'm uncomfortable that it's just in a regulation. And then the third question I had that I think you answered through the chair. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Are we going to – so let's say this program's gone on for a couple of years. Let's say there's been a lot of money the state has given out in tax credits. Is that information going to be privileged, or are we going to find out exactly how we're spending our money?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, this will fall under the same confidentiality statutes that all other taxpayers fall under. We will be able to aggregate information up to three or more taxpayers, and we'll be able to provide that information at that level.
Same as the movie credits?
Same as the movie credits and several other credits that are on in statute. Yes, sir.
Through the chair, so you'll tell us the amounts, but what if we want to know what exactly the money is going towards?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, we are able to do that also.
We're actually working on a report such as that for the oil and gas tax credits. So we can provide the types of credits that are the types of expenses that those credits are being used on.
And these next two, I guess, will be addressed by an amendment, but I guess not knowing how this is going to work, we certainly want people to use the research and development tax credit. And, you know, if we end up giving out $30 million or $40 million of research and development tax credits, it seems like that's something that we would be comfortable with. But, you know, what if it got into the hundreds of millions? And I know that's great, we're getting more research and development, but the question is, can we afford it, or should we adjust the tax credit rate at that point? Would you have any problem with capping the amount of money the state spends on this, or sunsetting the bill just so we can see how it works before we, instead of making it permanent?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think since it is a new path that we're taking, we don't know how long it will take for a company to get here, realize the tax credit, realize the tax down the road that they can then take that tax credit against. So I think setting an artificial date for a sunset may actually discourage a company who might need a longer period in order to realize that. Now, there's 7 years in there, I believe, right now, that they can carry forward an expense year to year. But I think setting an artificial sunset may discourage companies from looking at us in the first place.
Thanks. I've got no other questions for right now.
Okay. Any other general questions? I wanted to see if we could answer any general questions before we got to the amendment process and a little less formality. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sort of trying to figure this out for myself, but as usual, I can't. So, Mr. Tangeman, this system, if I'm understanding this correctly, institutes essentially an unlimited number and cost of credits without, as near as I can tell, any really, really very good definition of what these credits are or what they can be used for. Am I not reading this correctly?
Through the chair.
I'm going to reframe that. He can't tell whether you're reading something. I'm going to try to get away. It's late in the process, but away from, am I right on this or those types?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
No.
I'll try this again. Is the effect of this piece of legislation to create a situation in which an unknown number of applicants for an unknown amount of money is eligible?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, the purpose is to increase expenditures in our state. Now, research and development is taking place all over this country. We just want to get a bigger portion of that taking place in our state. So in order to realize the tax credit, you have to have people working here, you have to have plants, you have to have something going on driving the economy here in order to realize an expenditure of a dollar, and therefore a tax credit against that dollar. So the purpose is, I hope this tax credit is a tremendous success, because that means we're going to have a lot of money to be spent in the state on research and development. Now, it might be research and development for something that's going to go into an application that is only Alaska exclusive, or it could be used anywhere around the world. But the whole point is we want that upfront research and development expenditure to be taking place in our state. And whether other states enjoy the back end of that, that's going to be driven from their state. We want that.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. But I think what you just told me was we are opening a window into our tax structure, and therefore the amount of money that's available to the state to actually, you know, do the things that we try to do in the budgets. And there's no way to either examine it or to understand what the top end of this is going to be. So essentially, this is a, as I'm understanding this is a blank check for anything that's called research and development in the state. Am I not?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I think it's important to make a distinction here. We're not talking about dollars that are already in our pocket. We're talking about new research and development. And this tax credit is taken against a tax liability resulting from that new research and development. So we're talking about dollars that haven't even entered our stream yet. Now, hopefully the way this will work is we get a rush of research and development here. A lot of new taxpayers coming to the state, which is good. They're going to realize, you know, in the first couple of years they might not have a tax liability. And that's why the carry forwards in there, to allow them to carry these expenditures forward. But by golly, when they realize a tax liability, they're going to start realizing those tax credits. But then after that, it's new money. So it's not, we're not, it's applied against new money that's going to be generated by new business and new activity taking place in the state. So it's not money coming out of the top of its current.
Just digging. By golly, do you have a question?
Just one more time, Mr. Chairman. So these credits aren't saleable. They aren't transferable. They're strictly for R&D done in the state, and they're limited by taxpayer or perhaps by project. It doesn't make any difference, really, in this case. But the actual financial liability of this is at this point unknown. Is that a fair summation here?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, you are correct.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have Representative Costello, patient waiting in queue.
Thank you, through the chair. Is now a good time to ask a question about the fiscal note?
Well, I think it's relevant to the whole discussion here, so I think any. Talking about the, this is about fiscal impact.
Through the chair, I was wondering if you could explain the indeterminate fiscal note from the Department of Revenue.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, it is indeterminate because this is for new research and development, which is not yet taking place. And that's important because we don't want the benefit to be credited for research and development sort of taking place. So this is for, it could be new research and development by current taxpayers, but the goal is to drive new activity.
Follow-up?
I think, Stella.
Through the chair. So, currently, the department is not collecting information from companies that have corporate tax liability on the kinds of activities they're doing. So we really don't know right now if any R&D is happening in Alaska.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, we are collecting that type of information. We do have that type of information. Corporate tax has been on the books for many years, so we have been collecting.
Final question. So essentially then we don't believe any R&D is occurring right now, and this legislation is intended to attract that kind of activity. Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tansman, I want to make sure we're clear on new and then. And I've had this discussion with you several times, I think. New meaning not just new to the state of Alaska. This is not technology used elsewhere brought into the state of Alaska, but new development technology. If they invent new ways to produce oil, if they invent new ways to smelt minerals that's done in the state of Alaska, that's what we're talking about, new innovative stuff, new inventions.
Through the chair, Representative, you are correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Confused on a couple things. New ways to produce oil. I thought you said that was excluded under 4355.
Mr. Chair, Representative Guerra, research and development on oil production, it is not taking place. It is available to be taken against the corporate income tax, not the production tax. And that's the difference. The double dip or the stacking or the concerns that people have is that a dollar is going to be deducted against the corporate income tax and against the production tax. That's not a lot. Research and development is not a deductible qualified capital expenditure against the lease expenditure and the production tax, only against the corporate income tax.
Thank you. Through the chair, just a couple other follow-ups on some answers. You kept saying this is for new research and development not taking place, but, I mean, some of it is taking place, right? There's the 20% federal tax credit. I assume some people are using that. So for stuff that's not taking place and this brings in new people, I guess that's new, but for stuff that people are going to do anyway, we're going to be adding in a 20% tax credit to people who are doing this stuff under the existing federal 20% tax credit, right?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, for folks that are taking advantage of research and development now at the level, there's a three-year average system. So if they're spending $1 million of qualified expenditures for research and development in the last 3 years, $1 million, and they spend $2 million this year, that additional $1 million would be eligible for this tax credit. So it's got to be above and beyond their last three-year average.
Okay. And then just finally through the chair, you said that we already get the information as to what they're spending the money on, but you said it was just like we get it under ACES and just like we get it under the film credit bill, and we don't really, at least many of us feel like we don't get that information under ACES and the film credit bill. We get dollars spent, but we don't know exactly what the money was spent on, so we have a hard time evaluating whether our money is being well spent. So did you really mean that it's going to be as transparent as the film credit bill and ACES, or is it different than that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Guerra, I think you will, we're currently providing a five-year look-back presentation in another committee in the House right now, and that does shed light on the type of expenditures that are taking place. When it comes to taxpayer information, we do hold that confidential. There is statute on the books that says if an employee of the Department of Revenue releases something that shouldn't be released, they can be fined $5,000 and sent to jail for 3 years. That's a clerk, that's somebody at the front desk, that's somebody in the department. I believe it's my responsibility to err on the side of being overly protective when it comes to confidential taxpayer information. Taxpayers have a right to keep their information confidential, and we take that very seriously. That being said, there are statutes on the books that allow us to aggregate things up, present them in a certain fashion, which we do. In the RSB, there's we do show information in the annual, the department's annual report information is available. If you call our office, information is available. We field hundreds, if not thousands, of questions every session relating to these types of questions. So there's certainly no way to answer them. But we follow the statutes on the books.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Getting back to this same issue, when we're exploring a lot of these issues, these taxes and deductions, credits, I've never felt that we had enough understanding of what they actually were. And you've just given us an explanation of how strongly you felt you need to protect taxpayers' confidentiality. I feel equally as strong, or I would say stronger, that I need all the information that I can get to make decisions. And you've even been criticized by the State Review Assessment Review Board for for keeping things confidential that were public. And I'm just wondering, because I guess the connotation was somebody said if somebody gave you information, and I think they used the McDonald's analogy, if they a taxpayer stamped it confidential, that you could not release that. So I'm just trying to figure out how much can you release as far as us understanding what is in some of these reports. I know you have this one standard for keeping these confidential, but how far do you need to go?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I believe you're referring to a hearing that has taken place in the other body last week. mini trial that's taking place over there, I believe it's inappropriate for the state to comment on. That's an ongoing case. You're hearing from one side of the litigation, and it is certainly not the right forum to address the ongoing case. So I understand the McDonald's wrapper is a ridiculous analogy. But the point is, if somebody provides us with something that is from a taxpayer that's confidential, and they release it in some form, in a speech or what have you, that does not give us the right to release that piece of information. Unless they call us and say, you can release this piece of information. If they release it, that doesn't automatically give us the authority to release it. Again, we're very, very careful with the information that's turned over.
This is something I mean, I don't know. I know we're generally too busy over here to keep track of some of those hearings in the Senate, but I know they're happening. But I'm referring to the documents in the court case that said that. And I know maybe after the Supreme Court rules on it, we'll have a better understanding of what we actually didn't get access to that we should have, that could have been built a case to justify some of these things. But I've been very concerned about it in this body and other bodies, and the public has the ability to understand what's actually going on and not having taxpayers been able to obfuscate or confuse the issue by doing things like that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gansman, following this discussion of information that should be released to the legislature or the public, I understand the confidential tax information, I think, fairly well. We've had that discussion on other pieces of legislation. But concerning this research and development tax credits, now, what qualifies for this is developing applying for patents. If we were releasing information that talked about patents that were developed or applied for under this, I would think we would run astray of quite a few laws. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, you're correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you give me just a little part of the idea of what the evaluation process is going to be for deciding who you're going to pay the credits to and who you're not?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, it's not an evaluation process. It's a matter of an audit of a tax return in which they are claiming a research and development expense. And there are statutes in both state and federal law that explain what research and development credit are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we're going to be arm wrestling with the federal government about the meanings of these things when they're applied for here in the state. Did I hear that correctly? Or is the evaluation process in the state going to be separate from the federal?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, we're following the federal statute. We're not trying to recreate the wheel here. We'll piggyback on their legislation.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? We'll jump into, amendments since we've already been talking about them a little bit. And I would, we purposely
although this could have been brought up at bills previously heard, I made a point. I would like amendments to get to us a little more than a few minutes before debate. We're going to let it go, but that is, I'd like to talk to departments about fiscal note changes and things. So, you know, on this one, it's particularly we made a purposeful effort to let be plenty of notice when the bill is coming up. And, you know, I haven't had a hard and fast adherence to having amendments before us, but I think some general courtesy would be in line rather than just a couple minutes in the debate handing them out. So let's proceed with them. We have two amendments of the four that look identical. We have both on the same day, both have the reference number. Unless there's some subtle difference, are those both the same amendments, number one and number four?
Mr. Chair.
They both have the same reference numbers, identifying numbers from Legislative Legal Services.
I don't have two identical amendments.
Okay. Well, about you, number one and number four. I don't have a keen legal eye, but I don't identify. I just for our bookkeeping records.
Right. Mr. Chair, last year we had handed out an amendment that on this bill, which was...
That was another number one.
But these amendments are both dated 2/9/12, and at the same, right. And they're both... And
delete that number one and number four.
Why don't we delete number four, and then we never get to it?
Right. Mr. Chair, I have an amendment number one that we distributed last year, and I guess I can understand how that got lost.
And I don't have that amendment before. We'll take them one at a time here, and we're going to read the, have you, when offering the amendment, read the full legal citation number, so that's 30 of record. We now have three amendments before us that for potential offering. Amendments number one, amendments number two, and amendments number three. Let's clear the others out of our pocket.
Mr. Chair, I also, some of us have amendment number one from last year. Some of us don't, I guess. This side of the table has it for some reason.
Does that amendment conform to the committee substitute?
It does not.
So that's why we like to have things in advance. And we were assuming that you were offering new amendments. But we will offer amendments, and we'll deal with them and whatever issues we have. That's why I want you to read the references at the top, and because we have such a multitude of amendments in our package.
Sure. I appreciate it, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I thought we had these distributed earlier, and it's my fault. For not doing that. I introduce, I offer amendment number one, Mr. Chair, which is bullet B4.
Why don't you read the whole title?
27-GH1951X/B.4.
I like 2/9/12.
Object.
Okay. I'll object to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a new tax credit system. We have no idea how much it's going to cost us. We have no idea if it's going to get us research and development different than what we're already getting under the federal tax credit. On the low end, we might just get what we're already getting under the federal tax credit, and it's not worth us to spend the 20%. On the extreme high end, it may cost us so much money that we might decide to do what other states do, which is at a certain level they reduce the percentage. You know, maybe after $20 million of state spend, then the credit goes down, and then it goes down a little bit to preserve state money. So what amendment number one does is it says we should revisit this in 2017. Companies should be able to
provides a sunset?
That's a sunset.
Okay.
Companies would be able to use these through January 1st, 2017, And it also inserts a line that at least gives us a description of the research and development projects for which the credit was granted. If there are federal laws on patents, we can't that require confidentiality, we can't supersede those federal laws. So those federal laws on patents would remain in force on confidentiality. But I think we should have a better sense of what we're spending our money on than what we do on some of the other credits that we give in the state. So it's a sunset, and it gives us a description of the research and development projects for which the credit was granted.
Representative Newman, you had a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'm just looking at this, and when we look at a sunset of 2017, but this also allows for credits to be taken up to 7 years. So I think we have a little bit of an issue there. I'm looking at page 2, lines 5. The expenditure is incurred. The excess of the credit over liability may carry forward up to 7 years, which I think is more inappropriate due to the fact that, again, we want new development in the state of Alaska. And if I look at, I'm going to go to the oil and gas field, where we have a lot of new technology emerging. And it depends if you're a current producer that's selling a product and paying corporate taxes as to whether this would happen or not, whether you could even get these credits. But because you can carry them forward for up to 7 years, it allows you the time to carry those forward till you do get to producing. Or else if you were a new company coming into the state of Alaska trying to develop new industry, new oil in the state of Alaska, it would be very difficult to do that if you're not paying any corporate tax credits. First off, these credits would be not any good because they're non-transferable. Allowing companies up to 7 years carry forward to stay in Alaska to produce and make those new research and development projects carry through, I think it is a good thing. And I think if we tie their hands by saying we're going to put a sunset on this in 2017 is a bad thing. Also, I kind of looked at the other part of this, like lines 5 and down. I don't mind reports to the legislature. I think good information is good information. We can do that through Legislative Budget and Audit. We ask questions all the time to get us further information. We are currently going through that on film tax credits and stuff. And again, there's confidentiality requirements that are not described, I guess, in this amendment as to whether we should take these. So I guess the sponsor then wants to try and cover some of those. I don't feel comfortable with this amendment and will not support it, Mr. Chair.
So, this is, I guess, divisible. One part of it seems so controversial. Ill-chosen word. One is probably no objection to the part about the language regarding the description of the research and development. And I think that, I don't know if anybody would have any issue with that. The policy debate is on the sunset. I believe page 1, the first section, 1 to 4, and then 12 to 16 deal with the sunset. Would you object to a division of the question, Representative Guerra?
Chair, I'd be happy with the division of the question.
We'll divide the question. The amendment will become 1A. The language on page 2, on the amendment, lines 5 through 11. Would be Amendment 1A. And the other section, page lines 1 to 4 and lines 12 to 16, then renumbered accordingly, would be Amendment 1B. So we'll take a question on Amendment 1A, which is the narrative of projects. Is there any objection to that? I'll remove my objection. Is that maintained? Representative Newman?
1A being reports to the legislature, Mr. Chair?
Correct.
Yes, I do have a question about that. Maybe Mr. Tangerman can help. Again, where it talks about a description of the research and development project for which credit is granted, again, what qualifies are developing and applying for patents. I think that the state could have run into some tricky ground there in trying to talk to the legislature as to what was actually given for research and development work or what type of work was being done, if they had current patents out for that. Could you give me your opinion on that?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, that's a potential issue. You're describing what type of research and development is going on. You're obviously shining light on the type of business and the type of expenses they're attempting to incur. So that is a potential problem.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Representative Newman.
On that same point, again, what qualifies is developing prototypes and models. We could go to developing or improving software technologies. To me, these could be highly confidential pieces of information, you know, as to what we're trying to give out there. I guess I don't know who would decide that, the Department of Law, Revenue, who would decide what we could give out, you know, as a report, as a basic report. I think that leaves it pretty open-ended, and I'm not comfortable with that. Mr. Changeman?
But through the chair, Representative Newman, obviously research and development is looking for new ways to do things better, and if those types of details are divulged to the public, that would probably discourage somebody from doing that research here. So I agree that you have to be careful with the type of information that's divulged and the ramifications of the impacts on those decisions being made. If they know coming in that they're going to get a tax credit, which falls in the middle of the pack, I would say, as far as understanding. But they have to divulge what type of research and development they're doing. That would probably hinder us being an attractive place to do that.
Follow up? Yep. I don't want to waste a lot of time. I'm dividing this per your notes here, and I didn't know there was going to be an objection of both, but go on a little bit.
Well, I'm just trying to, again, get some more clarification on. You do give reports to the legislature as to how much money would be spent on this. Already, I mean, we get that on film credits. We see that in the legislature. I don't see anything different here as far as applicable reports to the legislature beyond what standard reporting is.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, this amendment would add another level of that reporting above and beyond what's required for other types of tax credits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is objection maintained then, Representative Newman?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Edgman.
I think I'm going to support this amendment, and the reason I'm going to support it is because, contrary to what Representative Newman was just describing, I've worked on regulations in the department before, and I know you can take a description versus a specific description. You can carry it off in any direction you want, and I think that I'm not going to support the top part of this 1A, but in terms of
1B,
I got it mixed up. But in terms of this, you know, unless we had a lawyer here telling us exactly how you could phrase this through the regulatory process, I think it's general enough that you can provide even categories of information that doesn't compromise anybody's proprietary information.
Okay, we're going to spend just a little more time on this here, and that's it, a little more.
In the document that was provided to the committee on February 8th, as a follow-up, the federal government in 2008 has a list of type of charges, I guess, on the back end of paper. But what it has is a corporation's payment research and development tax credits, and it gives broad categories, whether it be manufacturing, information, professional, scientific, also it says mining, transportation, warehousing, real estate, agriculture, forestry, seafood. So there might be broad enough categories that would fit within, as does the federal government currently. This is the federal government, how they characterize that and combine them into words.
Okay. I think we're going to proceed to a roll call here.
Mr. Chair, just briefly in closing on one of the points.
You want to lose your amendment? Go ahead. No, go ahead.
It's just patent information under federal law is already confidential. I can't tell you to what extent, but your patent information is confidential. Otherwise, nobody would ever apply for a patent. So I'm just not concerned about that. Mr. Chairman, do you know the answer to that?
We are in deference to full discussion. Representative Costello.
Through the chair, I would like to offer a friendly amendment to Amendment 1A, which would be to add the words type of after the word the before the word research so that it reads on line 9. Insert a description of the type of research and development projects for which the credit was granted, with the intention then that the category could be shared, which is also shared on the federal documentation.
The offer of the original amendment, is that viewed as friendly to you? Do you have any hostile feelings? We'll revert it to not a friendly amendment then. If it's not, we'll vote on it.
It's from a friend.
Oh, dear.
As this bill is getting to become an old, tired friend.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm sitting here calculating the chances of winning the amendment without the language, but I'm going to say, if you say type of research and development, then all the person has to say is it was fisheries, it was oil, and we don't really get any information. So I'm happy to narrow it down some way, but I'm happy to exclude patents just to make sure, even though I'm pretty sure they're excluded under federal law, we exclude them here. But I think type of just will get us information that's so general that we won't know what the information is that we're getting. So I would object to the amendment to the amendment.
Okay, the amendment to the amendment, let's just go ahead and do you want to have any more discussion on it, Representative Costello? I just want to please call the roll.
Yes.
Representative Costello.
Yes.
Representative Dugan.
No.
Representative Edson.
Pass.
Representative Guerra.
No.
Representative Guttenberg.
No.
Representative Newman.
No.
Representative
Thomas. Yes.
Representative
Stoltz. Yes.
Representative
Elton. Do I get the voting
rights? No.
4-5-8.
So the amendment to the amendment fails. The original 1A is back before us. Clerk, please call the roll. If there is objection, maintained.
Yes.
Okay. Please call the roll.
Representative Costello.
No.
Representative Dugan.
Yes.
Representative Edmund.
Yes.
Representative Garrett.
Yes.
Representative Gutenberg.
Yes.
Representative Newman.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Stoltz.
Yes.
Representative Thomas.
No.
5-8-4-8.
No. 1A passes.
By a landslide.
You know what they call it? Somebody that wins an election by House to the House by one vote?
Representative.
Yep, here we go. We have Amendment 1B before us. Richard Guerra.
I think we've discussed it, so.
Why don't you go ahead and move it?
I move Amendment 1B.
Okay, now discussion. Representative Dugan, I think, was in queue.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll do this at this time, and I hope it carries for the entire bill, and just a potential conflict of interest on the research credits aspect of this, declaring a conflict, a potential conflict.
Are you a professor?
I think it's generally that wasn't very edifying to the public. Are you have a grant, or?
No, at what point do we declare that there's a potential?
You didn't have. You've offered it gratuitously. Now you've left the public hanging, but it's up to you.
Well, in my line of work, in the cut flower industry, there's a potential. I could turn my entire operation into a an experimental farm, although my CPA says no, don't do it. But
I think your own personal ethics will guide you. Representative Dugan? Representative Costello.
Thank you, through the chair. You know, often we hear that Alaska has the most complicated taxes that any other state has, and I think that what we're about to embark on here is just going to add to that, because what we're going to do if this amendment passes would be to pass something in 2012 that has a seven-year carry-forward but expires in 2017. And so, essentially, I feel that the amendment would gut the bill. I understand the intent behind it, though, which is to review what the impact of this legislation will be. And I think that actually is achieved in the bill by having the department report out the activities that surround this, the passage of this legislation. So I will not be supporting Amendment 1B.
Any other?
Mr. Chair?
Well, I just want to make sure we give you the closing if there's anybody else that wanted to comment on it. Give me the last word. Representative Guerra.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully I won't make anybody's head explode. I think the points made by the representative from Anchorage and from the Valley on the carry forward make sense. And I would like to offer a conceptual amendment that would allow the carry forward, just the carry forward part through January 1st of 2024. So that if you applied for the credit in time before the bill sunsetted, you'd still get your carry forward for those 7 years.
You know, I'm not real comfortable with doing a conceptual amendment on the fly on a major tax credit bill. I mean, we had the other amendments in late. I really had wanted to vet them and do fiscal notes on them and have analysis. So I'm not going to accept a conceptual amendment. If you have one drafting, I want it, and I'd preferably like to have it drafted by legislative legal. And
it's a, for the floor, Mr. Chair.
And I understand that it'd be a floor issue, but and I hope you'll pass it out to folks ahead of time so they can see it.
Sure.
But I mean, that's your call. We don't have the strict rules on the floor, but I'd sure like those guys, if you can vet it with the department's representative, Guerra, so at least they have a chance to look at it.
Okay.
The amendment 1B is before us still. If you have any comments on that, or do you just want to proceed to the roll call?
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw it, and I'll offer it on the House floor and take into account the comments of Representative
Newman
and
Representative Costello. So we have left Amendment Number 1 with the passage narrowly of 1A. Next, you have other amendments to offer?
Chair, I believe I just have one more amendment, and that would be,
a few more.
I would offer amendment number 2, which is 27-GH1951/B.1.
Okay. I'll object.
The letter that Mr. Tangeman wrote to us.
You're ready to get the letter? I didn't get it. It might have been written to you.
I guess it was just written to me now that I look at it. The testimony has been that under ACES, they've adopted a regulation that says that R&D expenditures cannot be deducted or credited. That regulation could be changed. That regulation they must have felt was necessary because the statute wasn't clear. I'm uncomfortable having that just in regulation form, so all amendment number 2 does is state and statute what Mr. Tangeman has said he intends, which is that you cannot take an R&D credit on top of a credit or a deduction that's allowed under ACES, which is AS 43.55. So we will state in the statute what we believe the intention is of the department so that we don't have to worry about the regulation changing in the future.
The departments wish to comment.
Thank you very much, Chairman Stoltz. I would point you towards, not to take up too much time, but AS 4355-165A, or subsection B, there are three basically statutory tests that apply. The cost must be incurred upstream of the point of production of oil and gas. The cost must be ordinary and necessary costs of exploring for, developing, or producing oil or gas deposits. I think three is the one with the most emphasis. The cost must be direct costs of exploring for, developing, or producing as applicable oil or gas deposits. I think those R&D costs fail all three of those statutes, and then the regulation is very explicit in backing that up. So I believe that the coverage that you're looking for that is obviously of importance to you is the sackable or the double dipping is covered quite well in these statutes and regulations already put.
Do you have a value judgment recommendation on the amendment, just out of curiosity?
I believe there is coverage in statute already, so I do not believe this amendment is required.
Any other questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, 4355 is production tax. 020011 is corporate taxes. And so I go back to if it's a mining company that's working on this, obviously not. Tax calculation is the liability of production taxes. But if we have new companies, again, new research and development that's coming in into a company that's not paying production taxes yet, in the maybe they never will. Maybe they'll sell their company. Maybe they'll sell their patents. So I don't think that I could support it for that because they're not at that point of paying those production taxes yet. To pay production tax, you have to be making money. And there's a lot of companies coming into this state that are going out there trying to find new oil and gas. And they're kind of coming in with new innovative techniques and the ability to do that. And I think for them, again, to carry that through 7 years, they might not make it 7 years. So I don't support this amendment, Mr. Chair.
You, what was your statement? I couldn't hear you. You what?
I do not support this amendment.
Any other? Before we go, Representative Costello.
Through the chair. I fear sometimes what we do is we clutter the law by having regulations clarify statute, and now because that's opened up a question about it, we're sort of going back and now having a statute clarify the regulation. And I think that this clearly deals with the corporate income tax. There are no research and development projects that are being attributed to our production tax. So we have a history of clarity that has been established, and so I won't be supporting the amendment because just as a philosophical position, I think that I know this sounds odd, but the clearer and more precise we can keep the statute, the better. And by inserting or this other statute, in case anybody was wondering, when in fact it's very clear, there's, what taxes we're talking about. There's a very definite line between them. I think in this building we talk a lot about ACEs and we forget about the fact that a lot of companies are paying corporate income tax, and that may be the confusion. But as far as the statute goes, I think it's very clear. So I won't be supporting this amendment.
Question.
Okay. Please call the roll.
Representative Newman?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Costello?
No.
Representative Dugan?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Battenberg?
Yes.
Representative Thomas?
No.
Representative Stoll?
No.
He's
announced
the total? 7 nay, 2 yes.
So amendment number 2, which was the B1, has failed adoption. Just if that wasn't written, it was 27GH195-1-B1, 2612. You probably already did that, but I just belted in suspenders.
Mr. Chair, I move amendment number 3, which is 27-GH195-1-B.2, bullet 26-2012.
And I'll object. Discussion?
My preference would have been to have sunsetted this bill just so we could see how it's operating. but without a sunset. I want to be fiscally responsible and also know that this tax credit is being used, so we would impose an annual $50 million cap on the expenditure of state funds to support the tax credit, and if more than $50 million are applied for, then we will prorate them. But you know, I think we all agree that at some point there are going to be dwindling state revenues for a while in the state, and you know, if we're going to spend $100, $200, $300, $400, $500 million on tax credits, that's going to put a huge strain on the state's fiscal ability to operate.
I just, for the record, it was stated that we'd prorate them. I guess that would be up to the department. They could cut off the list at $50 million. They could, I don't want it on the record that they have chosen prorating or prorate.
Any other questions?
Yes. I don't want it on the record that that this has to do necessarily at May.
Through the chair, I just looked at it. The intention was that they would be prorated. I've seen that we've given the department the discretion to decide how.
I just wanted to, I did want to put on the record that how we vote for or against this. It was again, if you acknowledge that isn't clear, that's it's a possibility, but not the direction of this legislation.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know you don't like conceptual amendments. I intended for it to be prorate, and this is the amendment I got back, which I'm now frustrated about. I guess I should have read it closely when I got it back.
We'll go ahead and vote on this as it is. It is a possibility for the department. That would seem a rational route, but it doesn't prescribe that in this amendment. Department, first comment, then we'll go to the questions. Mr. Tangerman.
Thank you, Chairman. I think capping, we're against the amendment. The tax credit is taken against new money that's brought into the state. Therefore, if we hit $50 million in tax credit sold out, that means the amount that the state is keeping is far in excess of that. So I don't see why you would want to cap how much you're doling out when the amount that you're bringing in is in excess of that. Therefore, we think it's probably not a good idea to put a cap on the amount that we could generate out of there.
Representative Newman or Mr. Stemmel,
Mr. Chair, the way I read this on line 7, page 1, it says a taxpayer, so any individual taxpayer company is still limited to a tax credit not to exceed $10,000 of state tax liability. And $10 million. And so I think de facto it's prorated per company. But I, quite frankly, that this bill is successful and we have 100 companies investing a maximum of as much money as they can get in this state and getting at least $10 million in credits. I think it's a good bill that tries to incentivize that, and I don't know why we'd want to limit it. To me, that just doesn't make sense, so I would not be supporting this amendment for those reasons.
Representative Costello.
Oh, thank you, through the chair. My concern is that we would be creating two groups of people. Essentially, once we hit the $50 million, we would then ask the department to craft new regulations that deal with everybody else who's interested in this tax credit. And I feel that it's a bad precedent to set that once you reach a certain limit that or level, that then the rules of the game change. And so I'm concerned about the legality of doing this, although I do understand the rationale behind it. And I think, again, that's addressed in the report to the legislature that will occur, giving the legislature a chance to look at whether or not we want to continue with a program like this. So I'll be voting against the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be voting for the amendment. And the reason is this.
we have, since I have been in the legislature, been handing out tax credits like they were lollipops. And this is just another one. Not only is it potentially a very expensive credit for the state, it's an unlimited expensive credit to the state. And the what the deputy commissioner says about what other people would have to pay in order to get this credit is interesting, but it's not definitive. Because unless somebody has got a much tighter idea of what these tax credits will be in addition to, regardless of what might be claimed, I'm just not going to go for an unlimited amount of money on this credit. Thank you.
Questions or comments? Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I assume that if you're spending $50 million, then that's $50 million, that would be the 20% of what taxpayers would pay. Is that what you're saying? So, I mean, this is a 20% credit. So
against their tax liability, correct?
Against their tax liability, not what they're going to pay. So, it's troubling to me that we would not have a ramp up that, you know, considerably next year, that there could be that many people dumping money into. I mean, I'm very supportive of research in any way, but like next year it could be that. I would be suspicious of a program that allowed people to walk in and just spend that much money in 1 year. Certainly a ramp up for people doing research is appropriate, but I mean, I think if we're going to be pushing a $50 million cap, we should have a couple of years watching that come at us, and then at that point decide if we want to raise it or not. So I think that the cap is appropriate, even knowing that the amount of research that goes on up north can be quite extensive, I think. I think having a better understanding of what we're doing at the end of the day is also very important. Thank you, Ms.
You have a whole string of flower shops. If this is successful, and we have an unparalleled success in this, I don't see why we couldn't come back in a future year. I share some of the same concerns about not keeping a cap on these tax credits, and it has grated me to agree with Representative Gere twice in a short period of time here. Maybe I'll get it out of my system early.
I think you should just let it go.
But,
be good for you.
Is anybody else? We'll give you a roll call.
Mr. Chair, before the question?
I might. You got me on your side. Okay. Go ahead, Representative Gere, then Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson. I would just ask for this consideration by the Chair, but you certainly don't have to grant it. I should have read this amendment when it came back from Ledge Legal. The word allocate on line 5 should be prorate. That's what we ordered. That's what we asked for. And if you would allow me to amend the amendment to say.
Why don't you read it on the line?
Sure. On line 5, it should be regulations that provide the standards and procedures to prorate the amount of credit available to each taxpayer. And it goes on.
And how do you spell prorate? Is it hyphenated or not?
I hyphenated it in my notes, Mr. Chair, but as conceptual, I think Ledge Legal would know how to spell it.
Gagley, well, the drafter can conform with whatever. UAF, Harvard, you know, I don't know. So is there any objection to that amendment on line 5 after procedures 2? Delete, allocate, and replace with prorate. Hearing none, that amendment is adopted. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make it real brief. It's my understanding on this whole bill is that, on this amendment, is that this brings our best and brightest here to do development and research. And they would have to hire people and do the research and hopefully invent something here. And then, if and only then, if they had a tax liability, would they get this credit? I hope we see every bit of this tax liability on this, because currently those jobs aren't here, our best and brightest aren't coming back, and this gives them an avenue to do it. So I am voting no on this, and I can just hope that we utilize this tremendously. Thank you.
Okay. Call the question.
Representative Gettenberg. Lumbar?
Yes.
Representative Newman?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Costello?
No.
Representative Dugan?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
Yes.
Representative Thomas?
No. We voted against each other.
So, I can feel the love. Please announce the roll. Well, so, amendment number three, as amended, fails. And I don't believe I have any other amendments before us.
So, fiscal note.
We have a, let's say, asterisk fiscal note, I believe. So I have to dig back in here again.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we've thoroughly discussed the fiscal note through the course of our debates, and I think we know what we're dealing with, and it is now a uncapped. Go forward and prosper. Is there any fiscal note? There are no other amendments. Thomas, you want to bless this ship?
Okay, Luke's co-chair. I move from committee CS for HB number 118, Ellen. Oh, we had Ellen C. I thought we had one amendment.
There wasn't.
Okay. Yes. Version 27-GH1951/M with accompanying fiscal note from committee as with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the bill moving forward? Please stay around and pass the fiscal notes. We passed all four bills, although two vehicles. Tomorrow we're going to be dealing with Senate Bill 66, which was briefly scheduled in committee as House Bill 120, the House Companion Bill. This is the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority New Markets Tax Credit Program. So the discussion will continue. And I hope you just hear the bill and look at any potential amendments and have people bring in for the first day so we can have a more informed discussion. So with that, we are adjourned until 1:30 tomorrow, Valentine's Day.
Thank you.